This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Poetry Foundation, with a reminder that Chicago is the pulse of poetry. Visit the Poetry Foundation on the corner of Superior and Dearborn to explore their library of 40,000 books, attend public events, and view Frente a la Vida, Facing Life, a striking multidisciplinary art exhibition by Chicago artist Victoria Martinez. Learn more at poetryfoundation.org. This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Crown Family School of Social Work Policy and Practice at the University of Chicago. The master's program in social work, social policy, and social administration prepares professionals to address today's most pressing challenges and offers flexible options with part-time and evening classes to support busy adults balancing complex schedules. Inspire change, shape the future at crownschool.uchicago.edu/socialwork.
You hear that? That is the sound of the clock ticking for people with federal student loans. Pretty soon, we'll need to start making monthly payments again. Oh joy. I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. When the pandemic began in March 2020, student loan payments were paused, and interest was waived for nearly 44 million borrowers across the country. But 3 years and a whole lot of extensions later, the thought of paying student loan bills again isn't sitting well with many. Today on the program, we're doing the heavy lifting and breaking down what you need to know now about paying back loans when the pause is lifted this fall. Our guests to guide us through are WBEZ higher education reporter Lisa Phillip and Jack Wallace, the head of government affairs and industry relations at YRefi, a student loan refinance company based in Arizona. All right, now before we get into what borrowers need to know, let's just get a bit of background about what's happening. On June 30th, the Supreme Court struck down President Biden's plans to forgive about $430 billion in student loan debt for over 40 million people. So Lisa, just remind us, what was the plan and why did the Supreme Court rule against it?
So the plan was to cancel $10,000 of federal student loans per borrower and up to $20,000 per borrower for those students who received Pell Grants while they were completing their undergraduate education. So those Pell Grants are for students from low-income families. And basically what happened was the Supreme Court ruled 6-3 that President Biden did not have the authority to make this change and forgive or cancel these billions of dollars worth of student debt. He had drawn on the HEROES Act, which allows the Secretary of Education and the Education Department to waive or modify existing student debt, federal student debt. But again, the Supreme Court decided that that was a no-go. And so now we're in this position where a lot of students were hoping for this and they didn't get it.
And Jack, of course, as we know, many people stopped making payments just in case the Supreme Court did decide to go ahead and forgive student loans. As Lisa said, that didn't happen. Were you surprised, though, by that decision?
I actually was not surprised. I had I think on your last show predicted that it would be a 6-3, 5-4 decision against the Biden administration because of the issue of the HEROES Act and the fact that we had comments from former speakers of the House about legislative intent. And then we had a vote in late May in the House and in the Senate that passed the rule saying that, you know, that was not a good idea. It was not legislative intent by the Congress. Biden vetoed it, but the Supreme Court decision held.
Yeah. So it's safe to say then, you know, so many borrowers are feeling disappointed by this decision. And maybe, you know, not just the decision itself, but the fact that their hopes were up, right? They were thinking that they would get up to $20,000, some of them, forgiven. So could
to get to your point, Lisa, I got updated numbers earlier this week. There are 36 million federal student loan borrowers that are going to go into repayment or will go back into repayment 9.5 weeks from now. Mm. And another category of interest is about 12 million of them will be making a payment for the first time because they graduated between March and May of 2020 and May of 2023.
Yeah, wow. So I'm wondering, I mean, as we talk about folks getting their hopes up, thinking that they're going to get their loans forgiven. Jack, do you think the president could have avoided this? Like, is it possible to share a potential solution or some information without getting folks' hopes up?
I personally think that the president and the administration got ahead of their skis on this one. And obviously, the Supreme Court thought that way. The Congress, both the House and the Senate, it took three Democrats to come across the aisle to vote against loan forgiveness in that legislation that they passed. So it was a bipartisan effort there. So I think it could have been managed better, because now you're hearing people say, hey, you told me I was going to get forgiven. And you promised me this and you promised me that.
Right.
And a lot of that came out last week when the Department of Education had a hearing, and they had about 175 organizations that either written or verbally during the testimony, were on the Biden administration for promising something and now, not trying to fulfill it. Now, having said that, you saw the president come out that afternoon of the Supreme Court decision and announce the SAVE program as sort of a quote-unquote save face for what didn't happen at the Supreme Court.
Right, which we'll get into that in a little bit. Now, Lisa, I know that you talked to a number of borrowers. I mean, are these the types of things that you're hearing when you talked about their experiences? Like, what sense did you get from them? That disappointment?
Yeah, definitely disappointment. There were people who were more cynical and, they had this feeling that this was going to get taken away from the get-go. But you also had folks who were like, I really could have used this help. I applied. I was approved, and I feel like the rug has been pulled out from under me. So, I think it's a mix of cynicism and disappointment, and just also, trying to navigate the restart of payments and have some sort of plan in place to kind of manage all of this anxiety they're feeling and confusion about their options.
You recently wrote a piece about what borrowers need to know with these payments coming up. So one of the first things that you write about, it's called income-driven payment plans. What are those?
Yeah, so those are Department of Education administered, and basically you can apply and have your payments capped at 10% of your discretionary income, and that's any earnings you have above 150% of the federal poverty level. So you both have your payments capped at 10%. If you earn less than that level, you don't make any payments. You make $0 payments. And after 20 years of doing that under the current policy, you will have the remainder of your debt canceled. So, what I heard from advocates and experts was that people should start applying for that now and get their paperwork in, because it's very likely that folks could have some sort of relief from that.
So, Jack, are there, piggybacking off that, are there different kinds of income-driven repayment or IDR plans? I know you mentioned SAVE earlier, but what should we know there?
Well, there are, and there have been for a while, a number of plans for saving money, as Lisa said, and cutting down your monthly payments. What the Biden administration, by introducing the SAVE plan and modifying some of the others, is to shrink it down from 8 or 9 down to, 1 or 2. And that's a good part of what the SAVE. So the SAVE plan is going to replace the repay plan that's currently in effect. And so for borrowers, to get to Lisa's point, right now, they need to be, as I said the last time, borrowers have got to be proactive and they've got to be patient, because, never before has the department had this many number of borrowers go into repayment at the same time.
I mean,
normally it's a couple of million. But now you got 36 million going into repayment. A lot of them, as we said earlier, have never made a payment. 66% of them are going back into repayment. But they need to go and make sure that. And the other issue is that a number of the servicers have changed since the last time they made a payment.
Yeah.
So
how can folks figure out the best repayment plan for them? Because as you mentioned, there's the repay, that's revised pay as you earn, income-based repayment, income contingent repayment, and now you've mentioned SAVE has been introduced. That's the saving on a valuable education plan. That one replaces repay, which is what I just mentioned. How can I know the best one for me?
Well, the best way to do it is to go to studentaid.gov and go on the website. And if you qualify for repay right now, because repay is still in effect, sign up for that plan. While you're on that website page, you know, check and see what other plans like public service forgiveness program that's still around. And that made the news, you know, a couple of weeks ago, where actually in Illinois, about 28,000 borrowers in Illinois had their loans forgiven under that program. That's the best way to do it. The other thing is to make sure, you know, that the servicer has their up-to-date email, phone, and mailing address.
Right.
And that their account information that either NSLDS or FSA is up to date.
So folks also need to know that these IDR plans that borrowers currently on them need to actually recertify their income every year. Lisa, does being married change things at all? Like, how does spousal income impact things?
That's a great question, and that's something I don't know much about. I wanted to note that, you know, if you're trying to figure out what kind of income-driven repayment plan you're thinking about, another tool to use is on the studentaid.gov page. There's actually a student loan simulator that you can kind of plug in certain numbers and figure out different plans that might work for you. It has like different portals you can use if you're thinking about, like, even if you're thinking about taking on more student debt, because let's say you're thinking about going back to school, kind of you can play out some scenarios there. But I'm curious to hear, you know, if Jack knows more about how spousal income impacts things for borrowers.
Change in the SAVE program that's going to become effective, that if you have a married couple that files separately, that the spouse income will not be included in the calculation. So that's one of the new plans or program aspects of the SAVE plan.
Yeah. And so to your point earlier, I think it might have been confusing for people, you know, seeing the stories about the Supreme Court ruling against debt forgiveness. Then 2 weeks later, they see headlines like, there was a New York Times one that said, quote, Biden administration forgives $39 billion in student loans for 800,000 borrowers. I mean, what should they know?
Yeah, so that was announced a couple weeks ago. And basically, it's a government effort to fix problems that have come up in the administration of the income-driven repayment plan. So, you know, after 20 to 25 years of making payments under those plans, you're supposed to have the remainder of your debt canceled. But the issue was that some servicers weren't appropriately keeping track of payments, because that's kind of on them to be doing some of that. So they weren't necessarily counting people's payments, and they weren't, you know, keeping track of what kind of progress folks were making towards getting the remainder of their debt canceled. So this, you know, there was more than $1 billion given to student borrowers in Illinois, 28,000, is supposed to remedy some of the problems with the administration of the income-driven repayment plan. So the Department of Education is supposed to be notifying borrowers who they figure out are eligible for this in the upcoming weeks. And I'm sure some folks have probably already heard back about that. Heard about that.
Well, let's jump to one of our callers. We've got Bill on the line from Hanover Park. Hi, Bill. Welcome to Reset.
Thank you so much. You know, I was listening to your program, and I just had to call in. So I do have student loans, and I applied to have that debt canceled and was notified that it was, like, every single cent of it was going to be canceled. And, you know, for a while there, you know, I had hope in for a just a, like the smallest smidgen of hope for, in humanity, because, you know, part of the reason that I can't go back to school is because I have this debt, yeah. And it will never go away. And you know, I actually had a bankruptcy a couple years back. It just got discharged, but you know that will always be there. And you know that debt will always be there. And then, you know, it's curious that you're talking about the Supreme Court. You know, I don't really blame the Supreme Court. You know, I mean, obviously the makeup of the court is conservative and all that, but like it wasn't the Supreme Court that, you know, that blocked it. It was the Republicans, because they were the ones who sued, and, you know, to block Biden. And of course, you know, we live in this kind of environment where anyone from the opposition, you know, is gonna block everything.
Yeah. No, good points there. Thank you so much for calling in, Bill. And I hear that frustration and disappointment that we talked about earlier, Lisa.
Yeah, exactly. Just the sense that you had people, I think, to some extent making plans based on the fact that they were going to get this relief. Yeah. And again, now they're looking at it still being there, right?
And Bill talks about that domino effect, right?
Yeah, right.
Right, Jack, where he says, you know, I ended up having to file bankruptcy.
Right. And student loans, whether they be federal or private, are not dischargeable in bankruptcy. So that's why his student loans are still there. One of the things I think it might be of interest to your audience is that because you have a number of, you know, high-priced schools out there, there is a substantial number of borrowers that have not only a federal loan, but also have a private loan. And so about 4 million people have got both a federal loan and a private loan. So they are going to be in they've been in repayment with their private loans during the forbearance period on federal loans. Mm-hmm. But they're going to be looking down the barrel 9.5 weeks from now, having to make two payments and not just one. And so that's why people really need to go, as Lisa said, to those websites and do the calculations and figure out their plan today. Not after they get their bill, which will be coming 3 weeks before your payment is due in October.
Yeah. We've got Zach, who's been waiting. He's calling from Iowa. Hey, Zach, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Sure. What are your thoughts?
You know, I've been listening more to your, you know, call-ins, and, you know, there's a lot to be said about what people can do about the government, you know, failing to live up to its promises. I think one of the best things that people can keep in mind is that, you know, there are opportunities out there, one of them being just going into the military. They have like $100,000 quick ship bonuses. They can pay off that student loan debt. If you're a VA member, there are many options to go back to school where they will pay it, even if you've already used your GI benefits. And so there's a lot that can be done if people are willing to get on the internet and look for options and be able to make the hard choice.
Yeah.
I realize it wasn't the government, it wasn't their fault that they got into these situations, but the government needs to do a better job at making sure that people are not going out there and getting into $100,000 worth of debt for a degree that's just not going to be able to pay the bill.
Yeah, good point, Zach. Thanks for calling. Appreciate you. Again, Lisa, we're hearing, you know, some similar sentiments there. Something folks should also keep in mind is whether their loan servicer changed, right?
Yeah.
Just so we're clear, why would your servicer change in the first place?
Yeah, so some servicers during the pandemic, their contracts ended with the Department of Education. So people's loans were then passed off to another servicer. I think by one estimate, I saw that 4 in 10 borrowers would have new servicers. So like these people are getting maybe communications, as in borrowers are getting communications from companies they may have never heard of. So my advice would be to head back to studentaid.gov. You're going to hear that a lot, I think, during this time. But head there and you can find out who your new servicer is. And I think that's super important during this time. Figure out who that company is or what that company is and make sure all of your contact information is up to date with that company and with studentaid.gov, your profile there, just to make sure you're getting all of the communications, all of the info you need to know in order to prepare yourself to make payments again.
And I know that you talked to a number of borrowers, including Aubrey Thalen. Now, Aubrey's a first-generation college student. She got her master's degree in public health. And she talked to you, Lisa, about her experience calling her loan servicer. And she mentioned every time that she calls, she's prepared to cry because of how stressful it is. Let's listen.
I have had generally not like great experiences when I call, also because a lot of times it seems like they don't know what they're talking about. Like they don't understand like the nuances of the program. I'd say before 2020, when I called, they really would be like, you know, I'm not 100% sure. And they wouldn't be able to give me like a clear answer on some questions.
Jack, have you heard this same sentiment before?
Absolutely. In fact, you know, in 2015, about 20% of the loan servicers changed hands for borrowers, and they were averaging 9-hour waits, which is why Lisa and I are recommending that they go to the websites and do that there, because it's going to be a multiple of that this time around.
Let's hear from another caller standing by. Here's Wendy in Villa Park. Hey, Wendy, welcome to Reset.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Sure. What's your question?
Well, I was one of those that received an email from the U.S. Department of Education July 14th saying the Department of Education will work with my servicer to process my forgiveness. So because I have made more than 250 or 300 payments, they did keep the data on file, obviously. But I've been in contact with Mark Kantrowitz, which is an expert on student financial aid, which he's been so helpful directing me into consolidating my loans.
Okay.
I was with Navient, and now I'm with Aid Advantage, thank God. They did keep track of my payments, obviously. I'm still nervous just because what's previously happened, but he has definitely guided me to the right place as far as having my loans under the government.
Yeah.
So I'm just wondering, like, what are the chances of this? And Mark had told me that since it was passed by Congress already, that this is pretty much a go.
Yeah. Great question, Wendy. Lisa, you're nodding your head here. Do you have thoughts?
I mean, from my understanding, because this, as Wendy mentioned, this was already, a policy practice that the Department of Ed has had for many years, right? That under the income-driven repayment plans, if you're making payments for 20 to 25 years, that you will have the remainder of your debt canceled. And this this cancellation that Wendy was notified that she's receiving is because of that program that's already in place.
Yeah.
So I don't foresee challenges to it, but, you know, I understand her anxiety at the same time. And that's, you know, something I've heard from many borrowers is like, I know I'm taking the right steps and I should receive relief for XYZ program, but I don't really trust it.
I can't
relax. Yeah, I can't relax. I can't sit back and expect this to happen because it might not.
Yeah. Anything to add there, Jack?
Yeah, one of the things, those programs are rooted in the Higher Education Act of 65 as amended. So there is a congressional foundation for those programs, and that is the program that her forgiveness is going to be based upon, and it should not be legally challenged.
I want to keep talking about options for borrowers, Lisa, one of those being public service loan forgiveness, or PSLF. Who's eligible for that, Jack?
Those are people that have worked for nonprofits or are teachers or first responders, policemen, nurses, you know, that, and as I said, work for nonprofits.
I see.
And made on-time payments, continue to make on-time payments, and then after a period of time, those loans will be forgiven.
Yeah, so that's still available. What does the application process look like, Lisa, for a PSLF?
Yeah, so that's another one. You can go to studentaid.gov.
What was the website again? I don't think we got it.
But yeah, you can head there and apply. But the thing with that is that you have to submit a form paperwork every year, because that's how the Department of Ed makes sure that your employment counts, you know, if you're working for a nonprofit or a government agency, mm-hmm. and also that the payments or whatever kind of payments you're making, even if you're on income-driven repayment, to make sure those are counted towards your 10 years of payment in order to receive cancellation under that program.
Yeah. If for these programs that we're talking about that require these applications, is there a point when it's too late to apply?
That's a really good question. Not that I know of, but Jack, I don't know if you know.
Is it ever too late?
I would do it sooner than later, because we don't know if, you know, programs are, you know, since programs are being modified mm-hmm. by the Biden administration. So I'd go and do it today.
Let's hear from another caller. Here's Kathy in Arlington Heights, who's got a question. Hey, Kathy.
Hi, thanks for having me. I have two children that are on income-based repayment plans. And what happens if you are on a zero repayment because of your income, which has happened, and also with the, and that's for the federal ones, but also with the private ones, mm-hmm. There's, all, you know, yeah. also I'm concerned about compounding interest on yeah. on these loans, even though nothing's been paid, because, I mean, they've qualified for that.
Yeah, it's a good question. What are your thoughts there?
Yeah, as far
Lisa?
As I know, even if you're making $0 payments under the income-driven repayment plan, those still count towards your eventual cancellation. So I know that she mentioned that her kids also have private loans. That's just for federal loans. But yeah, even if you're making $0 payments, those should still count towards your progress in reaching cancellation.
Let's hear from Sylvia, who's calling in the South Suburbs. Hi, Sylvia.
Hi, thank you guys so much. This is a very interesting topic, and I definitely appreciate you guys for taking my call.
Sure.
You actually answered some of the questions, and thank you to Lisa and Jack. As I was listening in regards to the public service loan, I forget what the last S stands for.
Yes.
But I've been teaching for many, many, many years, and I've been on the income-based payment schedule. I'm just also in agreement with some of the other sentiments. Of course, I'm disappointed with the ruling, but I do have a sense of responsibility on my part, and just wanted to, as you guys have already mentioned, be more proactive in this process of paying back whatever it is that I'm supposed to be paying. I understand that you guys have spoken a lot about the fact that the Department of Education is responsible, basically, for a lot of the changes that are happening now with some of the services.
Right.
So one of my questions was, as an older borrower, like from the 90s, who do I reach out to first? You mentioned go to studentaid.gov many, many times, which is great. But is it possible for me to become proactive in
yeah.
a way of reaching out to the Department of Education?
Yeah, let me have one of these folks answer that question for you. Good question, Sylvia. What do you think, Jack? Where can she go?
Yeah, no, you don't want to talk to any – well – you want to go to studentaid.gov. You want to go to nslds.gov and make sure everything you need is there. Getting a hold of the department is going to be almost impossible. Getting hold of your servicer is going to be almost impossible. So if you can do this electronically, the fact that you've been doing what you've been doing is great. And just keep doing what you're doing. You're one of the few, I will tell you, based upon the thousands
super proactive
of people that
yeah.
Lisa and I have talked to, that's being proactive and just keep doing what you're doing.
Yeah. Almost out of time, Lisa, but leave us with some final thoughts for listeners.
Yeah. So I think, again, heading to studentaid.gov, figuring out who your servicer is, mm-hmm. making sure you're applying for the programs. Even if you don't think you might be eligible, I'd say go ahead and apply, because being on something like the income-driven repayment program could really lower your payments and make it, you know,
make a big difference.
A manageable payment, or even a $0 payment, and eventually get you cancellation as well. I mean, if it's under the new rules that Biden has proposed, you'd get cancellation in 10 years.
Right.
So I would just be proactive, Jack said, and check out your resources. Also, check out there's like advocacy groups out there.
This episode of Reset was produced by Micah Yasin, and it was edited by Dan Tucker and Ethan Schwab. Every day on Reset, we talk about news you can use, from paying back your student loans to things around town this summer. So if you enjoyed conversations like this, don't forget to subscribe so that you never miss another one. That's it for Reset. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. We'll talk soon.